Hello, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live again tonight. Of course, it's always hard to tell because when I'm not live, you're doing the archives. And I guess you never really know. So it's always a toss-up. But tonight, it is live. And the next few weeks, I'll be out of town again. And then they'll be pulling shows out of the archives and having them on the air instead. But tonight, we've got a very special guest. She's an old friend. We did a lot of traveling and a lot of work together back in the 1990s. And of course, that's been about 10 years, but it just seems like yesterday, really. But everywhere I go in my lectures, when I mention this woman's name, there's a lot of people out there still remember her. So she hasn't been totally forgotten. And we're trying to get her back into the mainstream again. But my guest tonight is Annie Kirkwood. She was the author of Mary's Message to the World. That was very popular back in the 1990s. And so we're going to be talking about that and a lot of other things. But Annie, you're there, aren't you?
I sure am.
It's really funny. After all these years, I kept wondering what happened to you. And then you just came back into my life just a month ago. When, you know, you came to the conference.
Yes, I did.
But I never forgot you because, like I said, at my lectures, I mention you every once in a while.
I kind of went into hibernation for a while.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who still remember your work. That was really groundbreaking at the time it came out. But, what I want to do, I usually start at the beginning, and I always want the guests to talk about their life, you know, and how you got into all of this. Let's tell about your life before all of this happened, before you wrote the book.
Before I wrote the book, just a regular person. I had been in nursing for 19 years and had gotten together with my husband, and we married, and I was home. We had a business of our own on the internet, and although he was doing most of the work and I was really supporting him in the background, that was it. And then I got interested in, I kind of got into a little bit of a depression, and I had Ruth Montgomery's books come to me, and I read those, and I really wanted to know if they were the truth. Uh-huh. And then I found Jean Foster's books, and I was questioning, is this the truth? And doing a lot of prayer and a lot of meditating, and then Mother Mary started coming to me, and I knew from the beginning that there was a message that was to be sent out to the world, and that I would be taking it down. I didn't know that I was taking the message down. When I was getting the actual message, I thought she was preparing me to take the message down because it was so personal, and I felt like she was talking to me. But then yeah. Everyone that has read the book has always had that feeling, too, like she is talking to each one of them.
Uh-huh. But before we go any further, I forgot. Let me give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions.
Okay.
We do that first, and then we'll continue. The toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 1-888-815-9756. But, Annie, you said you were just an ordinary person. I know you were searching, but how did you...
Still am an ordinary person.
Is anybody normal? Is anybody ordinary? But you know what I mean.
Yes.
How did you feel whenever it first started happening to you?
I thought you had made a mistake. In my nursing career, I had worked with a close friend of mine and had worked in a Catholic hospital, and the nuns always confused us. And for some reason, I thought Mary had confused me with Marty, and I kept telling her that she had the wrong person, that I was not the Catholic, that Marty was the one that was Catholic. And I really felt like there had been some big mistake made. But I was told that she's not Catholic either. So
I remember that remark you made, and I thought that was so perfect. Yes. Because you told her, I'm not Catholic, and she said, neither am I.
Yes, neither am I, and it kind of floored me, because, and I had to stop to think, well, of course not, you know, she was Jewish, but I had so associated her with the Catholic Church that I just knew that she had made a mistake, and I was told later by several of my Catholic friends that she doesn't make mistakes, and I'm like, well, I didn't know that, you know.
But when it first happened, was it like a voice in your head, or how did it happen?
No, I could hear her outside of my head. I could hear her inside my head, but mostly I heard her in the beginning outside of my head. Now I hear her in my head. And I have a feeling. There's a feeling that comes before, several days before she starts speaking to me.
It's like somebody in the room, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yes. I would look. I knew I was by myself in the house, but I would look. I would open closets and look under beds, because you could feel a person in the room, in the house with you. And I spent several days or a couple of weeks or so, I don't remember exactly the length of time, looking for whoever was in my home. And then I started hearing her.
Uh-huh.
And she just kept calling my name at first.
Yeah, she didn't just come out and announce who she was right away, did she?
No, she just kept calling my name. And I had been doing so much prayer and so much meditation. And I had also been a Southern Baptist for 15 years. And because being Southern Baptist, you read the Bible a lot. And so I was remembering, when I heard my name being called, I remembered the story of Samuel and how God called Samuel. And Samuel said, here I am, Lord. And I kept thinking that. I kept thinking, here I am, Lord. If this is being called from on high, I'm ready. And you should never say you're ready unless you really are ready.
That's true. But did it frighten you at first?
No, it confused me. No, I didn't feel fear from her at all. There's too much love coming through for there to be fear.
I mean, when all of a sudden somebody's talking to you, you can't see them.
You can't see them.
You might be afraid. What is this? You know?
No, for some reason I wasn't afraid, but I was confused. As I said, I really thought there was a mistake being made. I thought that she had, or whoever was calling me was really looking for someone else. I couldn't believe it was happening to me.
But then, I know in those early days, I know I got my first computer about 1996. Is that what you doing? Did you just start writing it down, or what did
you
do?
No, I wrote it. Well, my husband was in the computer business. He had the first computer store in North Texas in the 70s. So we had computers, and he set it up to where I would type what I was hearing. And it's kind of like taking dictation. I hear the words, and I'm typing them as I'm hearing them.
Okay.
And you don't have time to think about what's being said. You're actually just receiving it and then typing it down. And I knew that it wasn't coming from me, because a lot of words were not words that I used. It was not language that I used. And some of the words I did not even know how to spell. I had never heard before, and I would spell those phonetically, and then we'd have to go back and try to figure out what this word was and how to spell it. But I did it on the computer.
Okay. Well, the same thing happens to me, you know, in my early days, too. You just keep writing, but they say that's the creative spirit, really. You just keep writing and writing. As long as it's flowing, and the same way, if you don't know how to spell it, I just put down anything and keep moving on, as long as it's flowing.
Yes.
I did my first 5 books on a typewriter, so I was really glad when the computers came along. It made it a whole lot easier.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
But first, though, I guess it was just random things that were coming
out? Well, I thought there were lessons. There were. She would start with my dear daughter, and then just give me information about her life with Joseph, about how God loves us, about the importance of being at peace. She would give me a prediction or two, and once she gave me quite a few predictions, and I got scared and I quit writing for 2 weeks. And then I came back and asked her if she was angry with me because I had stopped listening to her, and she said not at all. And so when I was ready, then we picked it up and started it up again.
What's up? Did the predictions scare you? Is that why
they
you wanted?
They scared me. Yeah, they scared me.
Mm-hmm. What, they were predictions about the world, or
they
what?
Were predictions about the world. And the predictions that she gave, some of the predictions she gave came true in 1993, and that with Life magazine had a cover that said what's going on with Mother Nature, and because that was the year that there were so many different natural disasters, and so as the years have gone along, people will call me and say, oh, this prediction has come true or that prediction has come true. I've not kept up with it because to me the meat and the whole main purpose for the message was the message that she gave on love and on forgiveness.
Yeah. It's the same thing with me and with the Nostradamus books. I have gone away from that because I lecture on other things now, and people still email and call and say this prediction has come true and that one has.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I was talking at the conference last month, to me, it's like I think we have bypassed most of the worst. I hope we have, anyway.
I hope we have. I'm not sure, but she's not giving.
Well, how do you feel about that? Do you think some of these still may come true?
Yes, I do. I don't think they're going to come true the way we envisioned them. I know that when I thought of the natural disasters that were given as predictions that came true in 93, I thought they were all going to happen at once and the whole world was just going to fall apart in a handbasket, but they didn't. You know, there'd be a hurricane, there'd be a bunch of tornadoes, and she said those were going to be increasing in intensity and in numbers, and that's still happening right now. There would be tornadoes in places that had never had tornadoes before, and that's happening right now.
And those were all the Nostradamus predictions, too, you know, places where they'd never had earthquakes.
Yeah.
And there were never hurricanes. Everything is increasing, but it's probably better that it is happening gradual.
It is. It's happening in a gradual way. It's not happening all at once. I thought it was all. I thought we were going to have tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes all at one time, and that's not the way it's happened. It's happened gradually.
Yeah, that would be too much for people to handle then.
Yes. Yes.
And this way, I guess it's supposed to give people warnings so that they can then know something's happened and make preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, otherwise, if it was all at once, they wouldn't have a chance.
No.
So maybe that's what it's all about anyway.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's giving us time to really get back to what's important. Because one of the things that she told me one time, she said, you coined, being humanity, human beings, coined the term Earth changes. And now everything that is on the Earth, in the earth, above the earth, will change.
Everything.
Everything will change. And we've seen that with religions and with governments and, you know, things are changing. And I feel like it's for the good because we're having to go back and reevaluate our priorities and where we are today, especially with the economic times the way they are.
That's why everything is always happening for a reason, and maybe it's to get us to look at things again.
I think so.
But I know, you know, like we were, I don't know if you were, but I was alive during the Depression, and so we've been through all of this economic stuff before. And so
I came along at the end of it, so I don't really remember it.
But the generations now don't have anything to base it on. They're just used to having everything.
Yes.
That's why I think things go in cycles.
They do.
And they're supposed to be learning that now. I guess that material things are not where it all is.
But we're seeing that happening today. We're seeing people going back to changing their outlook on how they approach life and on what is important.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why it has to go in cycles every once in a while, because the new generations coming up, they don't really realize what it's like to live without all of these things.
That's true.
So it's all for the better. It has a reason for it. But
yes.
Too many people have gotten so used to having everything, they don't know what to do when it's taken away.
Well, and for me, we come back to love. We come back to forgiving ourselves and working on ourselves, and then being able to help others, to work with others. And
uh-huh.
work on our family issues too. Yeah.
Well, I've had people in my clients here that come to see me who have lost everything. I mean, absolutely everything in their life. But then when they think about it, they were going in the wrong direction, and it was to turn them around, to take everything away so they would begin to reevaluate and go in a different direction.
I think so.
So there's always a reason when things
yes.
happen. We just don't see it when we're in the middle of it.
And a lot of the predictions, when she gave them, she said the reason she gave them was so that we could change them, that we don't have to live through those, that we can pray, and that through our prayers we can change things.
Yeah, that's exactly what Nostradamus said. He said, you don't know the power of your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
You can change things. It doesn't have to happen. It's not set in stone.
Yeah. So.
But you did, you wrote it all down. At first, it wasn't in any kind of order, was it?
No, it was not in any order. I got it as in daily lessons, and she would talk about love. She'd talk about her life with Joseph. She maybe gave one or two predictions. I usually got two or three pages, and she just talked randomly about everything. And when we got through with it, or when she was finished with it, she said, now put this in book form. And I could not see how to do that. So then my husband started getting inner guidance. It kept saying, you know, you help her. You put it in the book form. You put it in book. So we looked at it, and he was the one that figured out that we color code it according to topics. Everything that was love, he color coded in pink and highlighted in pink, and then he highlighted other things in yellow, and we used all different colors to highlight the different subjects. And when he put it in chronological order, writing down each day's words, it read like it does right now. There was continuity to it. And to me, that was amazing, because I knew that there was no way in the world that I could have done that.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about this kind of work. It looks random, but then when you put it together, it all flows together.
Yes.
And it makes sense.
And it makes sense, yes.
Somebody up there is arranging it all anyway.
Yes, they are.
But then, did you send the book, when you got it written, finally, did you send it out to different publishers, or how
yes,
did that
yes.
all happen?
We sent it out to different publishers. We got the publisher's guide and sent it out to all the publishers that were publishing this type of book, because, you know, there are some publishers that only publish textbooks or different things.
There wasn't very many doing these kind of books in those days.
No,
either.
There weren't. And we heard
I've
back.
I've been there, you know, I know what it was like in those days.
Yeah, no, there was not. And I did not want to self-publish. That was an option, but I did not want to do it, because I've always been a doubting Thomas. And so my challenge to God was, if this is the real truth, if this is your truth, then you're big enough and powerful enough to find a publisher.
Yeah.
So I just sat back and waited, and we got a publisher, and then I was surprised. When we didn't get one, I thought, well, that's okay. It dies here. Nobody has to know that I received this.
Yeah.
No, we did get a publisher, and so it was published first in 92, and then in 95 it was re-released by Putnam Berkeley.
Yeah, I remember there was a big company that bought it out mm-hmm. from Blue Dolphin.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When did you start receiving this? What year was that?
1988, about the end of 87 and beginning of 88.
You know, something that's so funny, this is all was happening to me. It was about 1986 is when mine started.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if something was going on with the world about that time.
I don't know.
Kind of all of us beginning at the same time to start getting this stuff.
We're getting the same message, just in different words and different language.
Yeah, and it's all similar, but it's coming from different directions, but it's all trying to tell us the same thing.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Because my first book came out in 1989, and I know I took 9 years to find a publisher, but I was working on other books before that in the early 80s. There wasn't anything out there. Nobody was publishing these kind of things.
No, they were not.
Yeah, Blue Dolphin was one of the first, I think, who was just New Age. They didn't even have the term New Age in those days.
No, they did not.
Uh-huh. But yeah, I remember when Blue Dolphin published it, and then it was later that the big company bought them out on that. So it really went big. It went everywhere.
It went worldwide. It was translated into 12, 13 languages.
Wow.
So it did go worldwide.
Uh-huh. It was during that time is when I met you because we were both on the lecture circuit.
Yes.
And doing all of that stuff that we had to do back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And all those lectures, we were on panels together. It seemed like we were always running into each other the whole time.
Yes, we were.
And I remember there was one conference that you put on in Dallas.
We put on two conferences in Dallas in 95 and 96. And you came to both of them, I think.
Well, I know there was one that I was at for sure.
96. I didn't remember if you came to 95 or not, but... but we put
it
on
was
the cover.
Big. It was very popular.
And amazingly enough, all this is amazing to me because I, like I said, I'm just really an ordinary person, and we were told to put the conferences on, and we did, and we ended up having people from 36 different states and 7 different countries, and you know, 500 people showed up, and I was totally amazed.
I remember it was really terrific, that one that I went to, the one I could remember anyway. But there's one thing I want to bring up that I think a lot of people don't know about you, and I think it makes it even more amazing, is I don't think you'll mind talking about it, but back way before you started all of this, what was it called, agoraphobia?
Agoraphobia, yes.
You wouldn't
agoraphobia.
Even go out of the house.
No.
You said you could barely look out the window through the drapes. You were terrified of everything.
I was terrified of leaving my home. My husband would leave in the morning, and I would open the door to the garage and wave at him and put the garage door down, and then I didn't go out or answer the door at all during the day. I couldn't go to the grocery store. He had to go with me. It took a lot of work to get over that, but I was to be told that I needed to travel and go give talks was just terrifying. But I was also told you've been prepared, and I thought no, I have not been prepared, and then I remembered yes, I had because when Byron decided he needed to take a Dale Carnegie public speaking course, and he signed me up to go with him. And I said, I don't want to do that. And he said, oh, they just want the money. You won't have to do anything. Well, that's not true. When you sign up for Dale Carnegie, they don't have any failures. Everybody is a success. leaves a success. So you have to participate. You have to learn how to do that. And I truly had been prepared, but I had forgotten about it.
But that was after you had this problem.
Oh, yeah. That was during the time I had this problem.
During that time, he thought it would help you?
Yes, he did. But I gave my first few talks standing behind him. I was too embarrassed to stand out by myself.
But did anything happen during that time that it made you stop being afraid and just...
Well, what happened was that at that point in my life, a lot of memories started coming up, and I had suffered some childhood sexual abuse. So I went through intensive therapy for the childhood sexual abuse, which also helped me with the agoraphobia. So addressed that issue too at the same time. So I did a lot of inner work and a lot of forgiving. That was my main thing, was that I had to do a lot of forgiving.
Yeah, that's the main thing that I do in my work, you know, mm-hmm. tell the person they have to forgive. They got to let it go.
Yeah.
But see, the reason I bring that up is because there's so many people out there that are afraid of things. And they're frozen, they're paralyzed into that kind of a situation. And they don't realize, you know, neither one of us, you know, I'm the same way. I had a lot of my fears, and I found that you must face your fears.
Yes.
You have to. This is the way it works. Eventually, you're going to have to face the one thing you're most terrified of.
Yes.
I went through the same thing. You know, it's like neither one of us started out wanting to do this. We were kind of pushed, kicking and screaming into it.
Very much urged to do this. And it was a compulsion. It's like something that you can't turn down. There's something inside of you that says you have to do it. It doesn't matter what happens to you or what experiences you have, but you have to do this, and you know that you have to, and you go ahead and do it. But it was tough. It was tough. It was not an easy road to go along.
Yeah, I was making myself sick even, because I was terrified of radio shows. I was terrified of all of it in the beginning. And now here I've got my own radio show. So
yeah. I still hang back, and you know that. I still hang back. I don't put myself out. I'm happy to do the show with you, but it's not something. I'm still a little on the shy side, I guess. You know, I'll still hang back, and it was easy for me to isolate myself these last few years and not come out to talk to anyone.
But what I try to tell people is, it doesn't do any good to be afraid, because eventually you're going to have to face the one thing you're most terrified of.
That's right. And if you don't face it, then it seems like life circumstances put you in the position of facing what you're most afraid of.
Yeah, you eventually will put in a position where you can't get away from it.
Well, now I'm facing learning what I've been facing the last few years is learning to live alone. I had never lived alone, and that was my greatest fear, was to be alone, and I am. Well, I am alone, and I've made peace with it, and I'm okay.
Yeah, well, I live alone.
Most of the time.
Family, but you have your family, too.
Yes.
You know, when I get clients like that, I have clients who are so terrified of being alone, they just go from one bad relationship to another, because they got to have somebody in their life, and that's not good.
No.
And what I tell them is, at the end of the day, all you have is yourself.
That's right.
Nobody's going to go with you. You better learn to like yourself and learn to be happy being alone.
Mm-hmm. And you're never alone, because I've realized that even though I haven't had a human form with me, I have never been alone, because I've always felt very much the presence of God with me. I've always felt, I've never felt like I was alone. It was like there's a spirit, there's a presence with me.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. You really aren't alone. There's always someone. You have your guide, your guardian angel, yes. But there's always somebody with you. You're never really alone.
No.
But I think some of them are so terrified, they have to have somebody in the house with them all the time. And it doesn't really serve a purpose.
No, it doesn't. And then I've gone from being afraid to go out alone to living alone and having to go out alone. There is no one to go with me. You know, occasionally I can go with my children, but I raise my children to be independent, and they really are independent. They have their independent lives, and I do visit with them and occasionally go out to dinner with them and do things, but my daily life is alone, and I go to the grocery store by myself, and I do everything that needs to be done alone. So you need to face your
circle.
Fears. Mm-hmm.
You have finally faced it all, and you've come full circle to where you've conquered it, really.
Yes.
And I think that's wonderful.
Well, and that's, you know, I was listening to all of the predictions, and then when that period when I was so terrified and I would hear them, and I asked the question, I said, how in the world do we prepare? And I remember her coming one day and saying, the first step to being prepared is to learn to love yourself. And my first response was, how in the heck is that going to help? You know, because I was thinking hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes, and how is loving myself going to help me in a hurricane?
Yeah.
But that's all I kept hearing, is learn to love yourself. And really and truly, when you can learn to love yourself and be at peace with yourself, then you can face things. You may not want to, but you can face them.
Yeah, you can face anything when you have to. It's a running away. Eventually, you do have to face whatever it is anyway. But I do remember whenever we were doing all the lecturing and everything on the circuit, the one time you told me you were going to have to go to South America.
Yes.
And lecture. And you said, my gosh, you know, here before you were afraid to go out of the house, and now I got to go to another country and lecture.
Mhm. Yes.
It was really a big step.
It was a huge step. Yes.
But you really did it all, but after that, let me see. I remember that you moved to Oklahoma.
We moved to Oklahoma. We were there for 10 years, and my husband passed away. And then 2 years after he passed away, I moved back to Texas.
Uh-huh. When you were in Oklahoma, it was mostly this, a survival?
We had one of the internet companies that we had was emergency preparedness.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, my husband took that to heart, and he did all the things. We had, you know, 150-gallon tank of water in the yard, and we lived out in the country, and we learned to do a lot of things. He even planted a garden one year and decided there were too many insects, and he'd just go down to the produce stand after that. But you know, we were into that kind of being prepared, and all the lectures that he gave on emergency preparedness. Now the weather station is telling the Weather Channel is telling people the exact same thing that he had been telling them.
And, yeah.
Well,
I have your books here. The one by Byron is Survival Guide for the New Millennium.
Yeah.
That had a lot of the things you discovered in that, wasn't
yeah.
it? Uh-huh. But I know when you had your business, you were selling a lot of things to people, weren't you?
He was. Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. And I say he because really and truly it was his business. It was, even though I was in partnership with him on the paperwork, it was his business.
Uh-huh. That was what you said when I just saw you. I thought maybe you had taken over the business, continued it, but you said you didn't want that part, though.
I didn't want that part. I'm not. He had an MBA. I know nothing about business, and I sold it. I mean, it just was not my forte. It's not something that I wanted to learn to do even.
Mm-hmm.
So I sold the business and. Someone else is doing that work.
So now you're living back in Texas again. What are you doing now? Are you involved in any other projects?
I have started just very, very recently started receiving supposedly some new messages. And I'm saying supposedly because, again, I'm not, these begin, as before, these sound like that there's something that's so personal that it's for me, but also know that that's how the other message came.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on that, and
well,
really,
I was wondering if Mary was still speaking to you.
Yes. Yes, she is. Uh-huh.
So she's always been there then.
It kind of went into the background for a few years. And I was receiving a message for a newsletter. She asked me to, her words were, I want to send a message to my readers, because I had always said, this is Mary's book. It was not mine. I did not claim it. And uh-huh. So we started a newsletter. It was the only way that I knew how to get one of her messages out. And then all of those newsletters were put into book form, and they were called Mary's Message of Hope. And
oh, okay.
So then the messages stopped. I mean, you know, that for the newsletter, it just stopped. And then recently she's come back again.
Probably figured it's time for you to get back to work.
I think so.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if you were still receiving anything and doing some things. Like you said, you know, you were really just the secretary. You were the scribe that wrote it all down.
That's right. I always described myself as the UPS guy. I was the messenger. That was it. I do not take credit for any of it that's come through me. It's just there. I understand that all of us can do this. You know, people think that you have something special if you hear this, but we can all hear. We can all hear the voice of spirit, however it speaks through our guides or through a religious figure that, you know, we can each of us do that. We can each receive those messages.
But most people don't realize they can.
Well, that's what I hope to get out to the world, is that they can. Everybody can. You can hear it. You just have to get quiet. You have to get quiet and trust that what you're hearing is the truth.
Yeah, because a lot of people think it's their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've heard some say they think they're going crazy.
Well, yeah. Yes. That happens. But if you just keep believing in it and keep asking, one of the things that we did, we were always testing, and Byron would ask a question in his mind, and all of a sudden, as I'm writing, receiving the message, at the end of the message, she would say, tell Byron so-and-so and so-and-so, and I'd write down whatever it was she said, and I'd show it to him. And he'd say, oh, that's a question I asked in my mind. I didn't want to tell you, but I was testing to make sure that what you're receiving was not coming from you.
Uh-huh, that it was real then.
That it was real.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, see, I get people, I see so many clients, and a lot of them are receiving messages. There's more and more people this is happening to.
Yes.
That, you know, it's not strange anymore. They call it channeling, but a lot of times it is just hearing voices and hearing things. It's not that strange anymore.
No, it's not. No.
You know, they come to me and they said they think they're going crazy. But, you know, I have psychiatrists coming to me, too, as clients, and they said that they're having to rewrite the definition of schizophrenia for the textbooks, because the original definition meant part of it was hearing voices in your head.
Mm-hmm.
They said so many people nowadays are hearing voices in their head, they have to rewrite the definition.
Yeah.
Who was it? They said Lily Tomlin said, when we talk to God, we pray, but if he answers us, we're schizophrenic.
Oh, really? And and Mother Mary said prayer was talking to God and meditation was listening.
Yes, that's true.
Uh-huh.
You ask the questions and then you have to get quiet to hear the answers.
To hear the answer.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the answer comes as an idea or as a gut feeling. Or as words, or as an impression, or,
uh-huh.
You know, it can come to you in different ways.
Intuitions and feelings.
Uh-huh.
But people just have to learn to trust themselves that they really are getting answers.
That's true.
And to go with those things, our gut feelings, really.
And it does not hurt to test. It does not hurt to challenge. There's nothing happens to you when you do that. Well, I've done it all the way through. I'm continuously challenging. If this is true, then as Byron did, you know, ask a question in his mind and expect me to get the answer. That's quite all right. But nothing bad will happen to you when you do that.
Yeah. Even in the Bible, it has ways that you can challenge mm-hmm. something that you hear to make sure it is real.
Yeah, that it is.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I don't know. When I'm doing my sessions and things, I always use protection anyway, so that it'll always be positive, everything that happens. So I think that's the main thing. To always work with the positive.
Yes. Well, your work...
Yeah, go ahead.
When you're working with God, you're working with good. And then it is going to be positive.
Uh-huh.
So the God is not separated into two different forms. It's just he just is.
Uh-huh.
And he's all that's good. And so as long as you stay, and my belief is as long as I stay in the presence of God, I am already divinely protected. I'm cared for. I'm in that place where only good can come to me.
Yes, that's what I believe. Mm-hmm. That it is only positive. Mm-hmm. And I think it's reflected in the work too that you do. Yeah. You can see that in anybody's work where they are. But anyway, right now you're beginning to get messages again, and
yes.
You're writing it down.
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. So who knows how long it'll be before maybe you'll have another book that you can put together then.
I have no idea, but I'm sure that it will it'll happen. If that's what's to be, then that's how it will. It will end up being a message if that's what it's to be.
Yeah.
I have complete faith in the process now. I didn't for a long time, but I do have faith in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it probably stopped for a while, too, because you did have to go through that grieving process.
Oh, yes. Well, and not only the grieving, but the facing of the fear of being alone. I mean, I was alone. It was the first time in my life I had ever lived alone. I had not been alone one day in my life before that.
So that is a challenge.
It was a challenge
then to do that. So you had that, and then you had the grieving of Byron. But he died suddenly, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'd heard. I thought it was a heart attack or something.
No, pulmonary embolism. He had a blood clot.
So it was totally unexpected.
Totally unexpected. And so it was it was the end of life as I knew it, and then you have to rebuild your life. And I had a lot of people say, well, you're spiritual, you shouldn't grieve. But we do grieve. That human part of us grieves the loss of another human being.
Yes, I think that's perfectly normal.
It is. It's very normal.
To hold in the grief is what causes the problems.
Yeah.
It'll come out sooner or later some way, because I have clients like that they've held it in for years, and eventually it will come out because it's a release, it's a safety valve.
Yes.
You have to grieve. But I'm surprised somebody would tell you that you didn't have to, because that doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, it's a catharsis, it's a cleansing.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
And to me, you have to end it in order to begin your new life. I started my new life. My new life started without me being totally present in it. It just was carrying me along. But in order to have a life, you have to come to a place where mm-hmm. you get to be.
Isn't it funny? We don't see things like this until we look back on them, though.
Oh, hindsight's 2020.
Because when you're in the middle of it, you can never see it. You're just surviving, really.
That's true.
Because I went through that. My husband died 15 years ago, and we had the same things. And when you're in the middle of it, it's just too much going on.
Yeah.
But it's all part of living. We have to get through these things. You don't want to get stuck in that kind of a mode.
Yes, that's true.
That's why you said now it's time to come out of that and start doing your work again.
That's right.
Maybe that's why you had to stop for a while so you could go through this process, and now you're ready to start on the new path.
I guess so, because when I received the information on your conference for last month, I knew I had to go. I mean, it was just imperative that I be there, and I had just had major surgery, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it or not. I didn't know that.
What did you have done?
Colon resection. And so I did not know if I was going to have the energy to go or not, but I just knew I had to go. And I'm glad I did.
You were selling something though, weren't you?
No, I was, the whole reason for me and in my mind, my whole reason for going was to encourage a friend of mine to take her jewelry and sell it up there. And her painting.
Oh, that was, I knew you had a booth.
Yeah, we had a booth and we had the booth, but it was her work. And I kept saying, Cecilia, you have to go. I'm going. You have to come with me and sell your jewelry. And so we did, and we came up, but, I can do things for other people, and I knew that I could do that with her.
Well, they say nothing happens by accident.
No.
But you were supposed to go, and it was wonderful to see you there again. And see, in that lecture, too, that I give, I refer to you so many times. And so I said at that part in the lecture, I said, well, Annie's here. Let's have her come in. She can talk to you.
Yes.
I think you were a little shocked, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
They came out and got you and pulled you up on the stage.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to be on stage, but I was happy to assist you in any way I could.
Because, you know, I do mention those things a lot, and so I wanted you to be there. You could tell the story more accurately than I could. But maybe that's what it was, to show you that's where you belong again. To get back, you know, I said get back in the saddle again.
Yes. I think so. And the message is still relevant. I mean, we still need to work on ourselves, and we still need to be at peace. Some of the new messages that I got after that one was about peace. And she would say, you know, we need to, the wars within the families need to stop before we can stop the wars between the nations.
Oh, that's interesting. You mean the way the families fight with each other? That
yes. And it's like that when you fight with yourself, and when you fight with your family, and when you fight with your neighbors, you're not creating peace. And we pray for peace, but then we don't live the peace. We don't live that message, which is to be at peace with ourselves, and to be at peace with our past and our present and our future, and to be at peace with our neighbors and our world.
It all goes back to starting with the one person.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And they always say one person can make a difference. One person can change the world. I feel you've done that much more than you realize.
Probably, because I don't realize that I have.
Because the book was so popular, and it really did change a lot of people's lives.
Well, it opened people's minds to other possibilities.
Uh-huh.
That there's more to life than what we can see or feel or smell, and that there is so much more to us than what we see. Or what we even know, you know, that we're such a great creation. I mean, and we come from such a great creator too, that we cannot limit him in any way. So it, when we limit ourselves, then we're limiting everything. You know, we're limiting our idea of God too.
Yes, and they said, God, there are no limitations.
There are no limits, no.
And I think now with everything that's happening, people need to realize that everything is really in their own hands. They can do it.
Yes.
Anything is possible. Mm-hmm. It's getting that faith back again. Maybe that's the word. I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, can you believe we've been talking almost an hour?
Yes, I can, because I love talking to you.
Brings back a lot of old memories.
Yes, it does.
But is do you take correspondence, or do you want people to contact you?
Yes. So my email is annie3k@sbcglobal.net.
Okay, say that again. What's that first part?
Annie. K at sbcglobal.net.
Okay. That way, if anybody does want to talk to you, I mean, email you and contact
yes.
you, they can do it that way.
They sure can.
And so you're open to any kind of correspondence that
yes,
might
come.
Yes,
I am. Yes, I am.
And like I told you, there's a lot of people out there that still remember what you did and what you wrote about.
Well, I'd love to hear from
them. Okay. All right. I think we're coming up now to time for us to sign off.
Okay.
But I really thank you for coming on, because it's been a real honor, you know, and I was so wonderful to see you again after all these years.
Well, I tell you what, it was just as great for me to be able to see you, and I was just as excited about your conference and to get to see you again and to listen to you.
So we're all still out there, and we're doing what we're supposed to do, and you're back doing what you're supposed to do. That's the important thing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I wish you lots of luck and love for what you're going into, and you're not done yet by a long shot.
Okay.
Okay, then, Annie. Okay. We're going to have to sign off.
All right. Thank you, Dolores, for having me on your show.
Okay, and thanks for coming.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, bye-bye. Good night, everyone.